Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? What's happening? This is Eric Citizen Payne, K's Son and Friends. We were off all last week, right? I guess you might have noticed that if you were looking for us. We were off all last week. Brother Byron was doing another show, a theatrical production. And so we took a little time off watching some of the news. And had to start talking about some things. Couldn't wait till Wednesday, man, because it was just watching this clown show. This is K's Son and Friends, waiting for Byron and Wayne, or that's what my mom used to say, right? Waiting for people to call in. trying to do two things at once as we're speaking, let the brothers know. It's getting a little bit ridiculous, right, everybody? A little bit ridiculous that this guy is in the White House, and I'm going to put myself on speaker so he can hear me a little bit better. He's in the White House, and he's allowed to get away with all of this madness, right? The norms that you would normally assume that would be recognized or are recognized by a president, this guy has just, and all of them, have decided that they're not going to play by those rules or pay attention to an established set of operating principles. They just said the hell with the rules, and to see just the complicity of all of the Republicans and basically the racists, everybody that's down with that. There's really, really only one conclusion that it boils down to. Is that that's the perpetuation of systematic racism, certainly against black people, amongst other things, but that's at the core of it. And so that's why they didn't have a problem challenging these votes in predominantly or just about all black areas, the old trick that they tried to use in suppressing the black vote. It's trippy to me, but the bigger thing to me is certain stages in your life. You come across realizations, obviously, as you get older, grow up, come across certain realizations about life and about things. And as we as African-American people in this country certainly came across the realization that we're going to have to deal with racism, systematic racism, as a fact of life, as a way of life, in fact. And so when I would learn about subsequent parts of history or facts or things that the black community was facing, or staggering unemployment, comparatively the disparities in wages and paychecks as compared to net worth, all of those things, it becomes clear to me that, there's all of those things, those stories that I hear, and once I've experienced those things that I found unbelievable, things I found unbelievable as a child, that our parents were dealing with in the civil rights era, but became believable as I experienced them, to the point now where when I hear those things that sound unbelievable about America or would have sounded unbelievable about behavior of certain people and individuals in America, I am not surprised because I don't expect or buy into the public image, the PR campaign of America being this place that it's been built up to be, all of the positive parts and all of the negative things and the true history of the country have been denied from people, certainly us as African Americans. Our true history in this country and just the true history of the brutality and the just
the way of life to abuse black people as second-class citizens or as animals, subhuman. So basically, it's not surprising to me that this dude would try to make the moves he's trying to make in terms of stealing the election, in terms of straight just not paying attention to the rules. I think it's surprising to all of the individuals that are trying to ride on his coattails that he has, in fact, no morals and no scruples about anybody. And I guess the surprising thing to us would be how much these people are willing to ride with this dude and really reveal who they are as racist and as prejudiced people and just, you know, people who have no empathy for anybody other than themselves. But those are a couple of things that have been on my mind. I'm bring Byron in here because I know he wants to jump in. And but yeah, it's really trippy here. Let's bring Brother Byron in, the legendary historian. Hey, Byron, how you doing this evening?
Well, my brother, it's 2 days before Thanksgiving. I'm going to start off with giving thanks to the God above, the universe, for helping us and answering our prayers, saying to us, especially in this country, if you want my help, this is God speaking to man in our country, United States of America. If you want my help, you're going to have to get out there and do your part. I want to thank the almost 80 million people who did their part voting for Joe Biden. Do you realize that almost 66% of the voting population, we have not had that kind of a turnout in this country in almost 150 years? Think about that. Secondly, let's get real. Don't celebrate January 15th, Martin Luther King's birthday, on January 15th. I'm telling the people of the state of Georgia and those who really want us to take back, let's finish the job, vote for Reverend Ralph D.L. Warnock and John Ossoff to give us the balance of power back to the Democrats in the Senate. Give a donation now. If you haven't registered to vote, get out there and register to vote, you Georgians, because you represent the balance of the power. Your black votes, your white votes, your Mexican votes, y'all go out there and celebrate on January 5th, 2021, and vote those two really good Democrats to give the power back to the people in the United States Senate. Now, having said all of that, you're right, Eric. Remember 2 weeks ago, I asked the congressman, is it time for a crimes commission? Is it time for an amendment, constitutional amendment, to declare that racism is unacceptable, white supremacy is unacceptable in the houses of Congress and the Senate? It's time, because I'm not so worried about the 70 million people who voted for that orange dude. I'm worried about the men and women in the Congress and the Senate who are swearing to protect and taking an oath to serve and protect the Constitution of the United States. And if they're not willing to do that, they don't need to be in our presence at all. They're treasonous. They're committing treason with impunity, and they know they're committing treason. And it's time for our Justice Department and the Attorney General to go in and quash this stuff now. Because it's out of control when a congressman and a senator can't see the light that they are practicing racism that is beyond belief, and that, thank goodness, because this just happened today. I don't know if you know this, Eric. This just happened today that, remember Judge Emmett Sullivan, federal district, United States judge?
Oh, yeah, was trying Flynn's case, was that?
Yes, yes, that's right. Guess who's overseeing the Voting Rights Case Act accusing Trump of anti-black campaign to overturn the election? That's right.
Oh, okay, that brother, okay.
Emmett Sullivan. And that's important because the NAACP has brought a suit against Trump, not the Republican Party, against Trump. Because if we can prove his violation of federal laws, including murder, including treason, including voter suppression, he can't run for dog catcher anywhere in this country. And that's how you cut off the head of the snake and you bury that sucker once and for all. Take him to Area 51. I don't want to hear about him, see about him, hear
things.
Nowhere in this country.
That's right. I saw about that story about the citizens of these states bringing lawsuit against Donald Trump for exactly those purposes, for singling out those areas. Let's bring Wayne in, legendary newsman. I know he wants to jump. But hey, Wayne, how you doing?
Hey, guys. I got the memo late. You know, I didn't realize you were on tonight. But, you know, just chiming in, I concur 1,000% about what Byron is saying. The only thing that I'm concerned about, you know, after the 20th of January, I just want to dismiss, you know, the orange man. I'm torn between whether pursuing what, you know, should be pursued, because obviously he's guilty of sin. And all this uncertainty that we've been dealing with the last couple of days since the election, since it was, you know, validated that he won, you know, the fact that the GSA wasn't doing their job because of loyalty to him. You know, all these things have got to be cleaned up, and it's got to be cleaned up by the Justice Department, you know, or the Supreme Court. There's got to be some legislation put forth. But, you know, I still maintain there's 70 million people out here who just can't seem to get a clue as to why, you know, we're doing this, that they feel that, you know, and I think more importantly, I still go back to the divisiveness of the media. I still think Fox needs to be checked. The same way they have Zuckerman and all the others before congressional hearings, somebody needs to get Rupert Murdoch and his behind in there and at least sort of like get things back to being balanced. You can have an opposing point of view, but the tremendous power that they have, I still, you know, and again, I don't want to reflect on my past, but if the stuff that these guys on Fox got away with or get away with, if we had been doing that on WLIB back in the day, or any other station for that matter that programmed black, they would have taken the license away. They would have yanked us. You know, it's funny all this is coming about, and we talk about this on the precipice of the passing of David Dinkins. You know, it just all these things come back to fold because, you know, it's that level of racism that led the chairman emeritus at Inner City Broadcasting at that particular time. The segue from an R&B format on WLIB, if you go that far back, to All Talk, because he felt there was a need for us to be informed. And now you have somebody who took the template, late Roger Ailes, and twisted it to make it look like as if, well, you know, we need to have a white version of WLIB too, espousing our beliefs, our needs. And it's decadent. It's disgusting. And there's a sea of ignorance. The American electorate is ignorant. And you can't afford to risk too much, you know, information that is misconstrued because you're going to have a rebellion here.
Yeah, you know, it's who controls the information, actually. You know, it's like, first off, I wouldn't understand why Roger Ailes feels they need a white station to answer to what a WLIB is would have been promoting, because every station was like that. So we're very much in the minority. Secondly, to me, nowadays, internet and on-demand information, on-demand streaming of content is kind of like people's own private entertainment, right? Private TV, pay TV. You got subscription TV, so it's private. So information is private. And so people have been able to bastardize and change what is facts and news, because it's private facts, private news, meaning our version of the news and facts in our little private circle. And that's where the problem, like you're saying, has become, the lack of information that people are able to get, lack of education that people might have from reputable sources that are fact-based. It has always been the problem in the country, on top of the hatred that, you know, people try to throw in the mix, or people do throw in the mix. you wanted to say, Byron, I wanted to get back into Dave Dinkins and the 70-odd amount of people that voted for both.
The
but go
question
ahead.
I have, right, the question I have for both of you, because you're very intelligent African-American men, and I really do appreciate what you bring to this platform because it's knowledge, it's history, it's fact-based, it's truthful. But y'all remember COINTELPRO. What was the rationale for COINTELPRO? Was it not to cut off the head of the snake so that the balance of the rest of the snake itself would die? Well, you know what? I believe that if you're going to straighten out this pandemic of racism, you don't start from the bottom up. You're going to have to do law and order from the top down. And at this point, cut off the head of the snake. Cut Trump's head off politically, socially, media-wise, and he will not, I'm telling you, the bottom half of that 70 million people will have no leadership whatsoever. That
well,
is their leader.
Yeah,
that
I, mean,
is
he,
the
I think he should be removed right now. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I really think he should be removed. He's already causing a lot of
he
death.
He has to be removed. That's right. And you know what? You're right about the media. They're still playing tiddlywinks with this man. It's as if to think, well, what's he going to do next? He's going to start a media empire. He's going to be the head of the Republican Party. You know what? The Constitution says if you're convicted of a federal crime, you can't run for anything politically. Stop him now. The power is in
white
the hands
supremacy,
of the
white
people.
Supremacy.
And
Trump's,
you got to give
Trump's
Joe Biden credit. Got to give Joe Biden credit for putting forth an administration that is both intelligent, they know the law, they're going to restore credibility back to our federal government. That's how you do it.
Yeah, I was jumping in there saying white supremacy trumps the Constitution. And obviously you have to get enough abolitionists, if I could play around the word, but you know, white folks that don't believe, that aren't racist and don't believe in any of the inequality between people or inequality between people. And so, like you said, once we get the new system in place, and hopefully that system will permeate down into the infrastructure, right? Because that's where it really needs to go. To disseminate in all parts of society, right? It has to be literally a part of infrastructure, an anti-racist, anti-inequality belief system. And so from, like, you know, the economic decisions and foreign summits all the way down to the government accounting office that puts in orders for bids for the paper clips for the post offices, you know. Racism has to be eradicated on all of those levels, as insignificant or not insignificant, but in order of an importance. Even if something seems not as important, still where there's interaction amongst individuals and Americans, then the system of racism it should have been made clear that, you know, white supremacist system is over and done with. But as long as you have people embedded within the infrastructure, you know, seasoned career government officials, they call them. You know, fortunately, some of the ones that were career government officials got fired by Trump because they did the right thing, because they weren't political. This chick that's running the Government Services Administration office clearly is a political government, career government official, if she is even a career official, you know, because that's the whole thing about a lot of his people. A lot of them weren't even career professionals. They were, you know, appointees, loyalists, you know.
You said something really critical as well as Wayne. Dinkins' administration, because I know you want to pivot back to that, the Dinkins' administration was destroyed by the media and Giuliani. Remember, they played a significant part of putting the blame on the African-American community. We were all there.
Can you speak up a little bit?
I said the media played a very significant role in the destruction of the Dinkins administration as well as Giuliani. They played that racist trope that they continue to play, and they're still playing it. I've been listening to MSNBC this morning, and I was listening to Joe, whatever his name is, Joe Scarborough.
Scarborough.
Okay, he made a Yeah, he made a quip this morning that I said, wait a minute. You were that same Republican who were playing into this trash, and now you've done your mea culpa, but he still plays that racist stuff that white people eat, sleep, and drink unknowingly because it's in their DNA. And we have
They've
got
been doing
to
it so
stop
long.
That stuff as well. You know, Rupert
They've
Murdoch
been doing it so
can be
long.
Stopped. That's right, because they've been doing it so long. And the rollback of the regulations started when? Y'all remember Reagan?
Yep.
His rollback of the airline association, the people who do the air traffic controllers.
Air traffic controllers.
And so it ain't no secret what's been going on, because at the part of this with systemic racism is really all about are the policies, or, for instance, the Bakke case, Alan Bakke case, the other day was the anniversary of that. And what was this? Reverse racism?
Why don't you elaborate on what that was, Byron, for people who are listening to us for the first time and might not be familiar. Why don't you elaborate?
Okay, reverse racism. There was a case, Alan Bakke, a law school, university in the California system, brought a court case to the Supreme Court, for which the Supreme Court engaged in identifying what we know does not even exist, which is reverse racism, because of the quota system set up.
Mm-hmm.
Affirmative action guidelines was set up to equal the playing field, the racial playing field. And the Supreme Court sided with Alan Bakke, and ultimately was the downhill slope for which the Republicans and Democrats who played into this notion that we're gonna circumvent the rule of the Constitution by throwing up spitballs like the Alan Bakke case to the Supreme Court, challenging the affirmative action guidelines. That's all.
But his case basically was because he was saying that he was discriminated against because they had that set aside for affirmative action, so therefore he was not black, and so he was discriminated against because of that. Kind of a ridiculous argument
obviously you take that particular case, and then you go, let's go, you know, beyond that case, and let's go to the 21st century, where you got wealthy white people paying to have their kids get into these schools, okay? And what do they get? Slaps on the wrist?
Mm-hmm.
My God, we got a system that is so broken. And you know, I mean, think about this. It's so broken. We got 12 million people who are sick. It'll be 13 million people who have been infected by this virus. Do you know what the percentage is that affects the African-American community? 18%. 18% of 12,637,714 people is 2,274,788 African Americans infected. 255,496 people dead. 18% of the African community is representing 45,989 people, black people, dead. And then you got a vaccine that's coming out. You know, where are the vote my people getting tested? Because if we're the impact, I don't want to hear about your first people getting the vaccine. I don't trust the vaccine. Okay, so it's got to be 75 degrees Celsius minus 75 degrees to hold on to a vaccine that may or may not work. What if it's 73 degrees?
And then you're going to send that
to the African-American community? You got a batch that's already doesn't work. So I happen to agree with you
to a certain extent, but, you know, with all due respect, if you're on your deathbed and this is the only thing that you have that's going to – because I'm certain Herman Cain should have gotten that vaccine that they gave to Trump, they gave to even Ben Carson, you know, with
ben
his,
Carson.
You
Thank
know.
You. He got,
you
but
know,
he was given
he's
clearance
he's like
to
a,
take the same
like a
thing
deciduous
that Trump got.
Plant.
Yeah.
You know, it
but
it just
comes down to
me.
Who's going to be able to get it, those who can afford it, because what they were trying to, the Trump administration was trying to do, was make it affordable to only those who had the money to pay for it.
Of course they were,
though.
And they were getting ready to let the pharmaceutical companies run ragged. So let me give you a couple of statistics that I saw over the weekend. You know, Brother Javon Johnson was hosting AM Joy, I guess, on Sunday. I had some interesting statistics that they put up on the screen, and this is from the University, Stanford University School of Medicine, Duke University School of Medicine, hospital COVID deaths by race between January 17th and July 22nd. For black people, it was 25%, and for Latinx, 33%, white, 35%, Asian, 63%. So between black people and brown people, they make up 58.5% of the deaths by ethnicity. And, you know, African Americans, was a percentage of African Americans dead from COVID higher than percentage of African Americans in the U.S. population. And here's a most devastating they won, an interesting trivia that someone studied. It said black Americans dying from COVID at a higher proportion than Africans traveling the Middle Passage. Black COVID deaths, something 19% of all cases. Middle Passage COVID deaths, 10 to 15% of all slaves. And this was an APM research lab, University of Houston. So that is something that is, that'll cause you to stop dead in your tracks and press your DVR button and rewind when you hear that. And so, you know, people should be aware, you know, what we're up against in terms of moving forward and how to move as a team. You know, I mean, the one thing about our people or our community has been that we can't effectively or sometimes don't effectively move as a team, and understanding what it takes, you know, is finance, it's having resources. That's why certain towns, Rosewood, Greenwood, all these communities were burned down, because black people had a system. They had their own governmental financial system, self-sufficient. And so that's why the jealous mobs came and burnt these places down. So every time, whenever we realize that a financial system is the base, an economic, strong economic system is the base that we can move towards being less oppressed, being free, really, then that's going to be the thing. And that's always been the thing, understanding the financial, the economic base of moving, you know, the plight of black people forward. And I don't think that that's always been the focus. I'm thinking about Maynard Jackson, how he was able to affect, give out contracts and award contracts to black businesses and make it available for black and African-American and minority business people to get a piece of the pie in the contracts that a city can give out, the government contracts, that then go on and help to create wealth and help these businesses to grow and build, you know. And that's one of the things that comes out of the Biden administration, access to government contracts and fairness in bidding for minorities and women and all those type of things that help build a community, build an economic base for a community.
Well, I hope everybody's realized, you know, because right now we're suffering, and I'm really, really anxious to see how soon they're going to come together with regard to providing a stimulus package. You know, there are a lot of us out here that are succeeding in this pandemic, but there's so many more. I mean, every time I pass one of those bread lines, you know, it really saddens me to think the record number of people. I've never seen anything like that. You know, I used to, even when you go on TV and you see, you know, places, you know, on the other side of the country where they're driving up to units where they're handing out food. I mean, we're supposed to be the most successful country in the planet, and yet we have this suffering going on. Yet we have this racism in medicine going on.
You're right, Wayne, and think about it. The bread lines and the food lines that you're seeing out of the Midwest is supposed to be the bread basket of our country. That's
right.
Where we're supposed to be feeding them. Do you know that what Brooklyn was to the city of New York City, Manhattan, Brooklyn and Queens were the breadbasket for feeding the people of Manhattan. They were farmlands.
Mm-hmm.
That's what their origins were.
Right.
And you got out in the Midwest, food lines miles long, where they're supposed to be waving wheat and corn growing. And I kept telling y'all, I told y'all this last year, watch what happens, because the silos were going to be empty. The food prices have shot up. And you know what? People can't even afford to buy food to put on their tables. And you got a Senate that dismisses its senators to go home for Thanksgiving. How cruel, how vicious can you possibly get, leaving people, your very own U.S. citizens, starving in the streets during Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday season? That's treason, people.
It is treason.
That's all a part of making Biden's administration harder. I mean, you know, they're making the transition harder. It's a despicable thing, but this is what this is who they are. And I hope that, you know, the whole reach out thing and wanting to reach across party lines, all that, man, beta for that. You know, I mean, they get one ask. They get asked one time, and then the hell with them, man, and keep it moving. Because this is how, and this is what I'm talking about, there's clearly people with the same agenda that the other side has that are embedded on our side. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, there's probably some Democrats who might have some latent white supremacist feelings within them, you know, that might buy into that system or whatever, to the perpetuation of that system, or might just be ignorant to how that system functions, right? So, I mean, we need to always be on our P's and Q's and clear-minded about our objective. I mean, I'm heartened by, you know, Biden's got the sister that's the ambassador, you know, his cabinet members seem to be relatively somewhat diverse, you know, and so at least they're getting access to the transition, mm-hmm. and they can start doing the necessary work.
Eric, I'm going to just show you how that appointment alone connects to African-American history. This is where mm-hmm. we have to understand why our history is so important. Her nominated to be the ambassador to the United States, her area of expertise and where she served best was in African nations.
That's right.
Liberia. My grandmother's first cousin was the first and seventh president of Liberia. So I take this to my own tree
mm-hmm.
of hope and ancestry. So it really does connect. Kamala Harris, African American sister graduating from that other HU. You know, we talk about this.
you all need to stop.
Okay? But you know what I'm saying, because now
that's
we have
right.
little girls and little who are looking up to her and say, I can be Kamala Harris, who goes to an HBCU, because HBCUs didn't get squat from the Trump administration, okay? But look how hard we
have to work been
to get
saying,
there.
No, I'm sorry. He's been saying that all along, that he's given money to the HBCUs. No other president has ever done what he's done for black people. You know.
Yeah. Right.
I don't
that
think
was
they freed up the funds.
To the 8% or 12% that voted for him. And I've heard it from some of my own relatives. I said, excuse me, did you call one of these presidents of a HBCU and ask them what they thought of the money that they were supposed to get, because they didn't get a dime?
Yeah. Okay, well,
that
I'm ready
money
to hear
was
that.
Taken off the table. That's right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's all BS, and it's not my initials, okay?
You know,
but you know what I'm saying, because now we have to look. That's why I say don't wait till January 15th to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday in the state of Georgia. Y'all got some extra change. Send some money down to the state of Georgia. We can take
yeah.
that state.
That's
it's
right.
ours.
Let's get it done.
We can. Let's get it done. You celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday on January 5th. Y'all vote for Reverend Raphael Warnock, and you vote for John Ossoff. Y'all can complete the mission. If you got the state to turn blue by 14,000, 16,000 votes, guess what? Those who didn't believe, y'all now have this opportunity to claim the real brass ring and give Joe Biden what he needs to succeed in reducing the importance of a Mitch McConnell, the importance of that clown from South Carolina. You know, it's like,
you know,
get rid of these bad. These are traitors, people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. It really reveals, you know, that these people really don't. The country, United States, and all that. But that only goes as far as it works for them. And the minute it stops working for them, they're just going to do what they want to do. You know, we want to. I heard Joy Reid talk about make an analogy or a comparison that, Rudy Giuliani was Dave Dinkins' Trump, as what Trump was to Obama. You know, just heckling him all the time. And, you know, when we remember back when the cops marched on City Hall, Wayne, back in the day.
And
protesting Dave Dinkins and calling him the N-word and all this kind of stuff. There was Rudy egging him on, mad because Dave beat him in the Democratic primary. And that's when Rudy, after that, became a Republican, right? Right, Wayne? You want to talk about that a little bit?
It's the history. And when I see his behavior, you know, the guy just seems to be catatonic every time he speaks. He was, before the television cameras down there in Philadelphia the other day, trying to register a falsehood to see if they could just open up and do another investigation on the votes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all meaningless. And I'd like to think at this juncture, not to say that I want to even see a Trump in 2024, but he's got to see how much of a liability Rudolph Giuliani has been to him through 2019, which led to the Mueller investigation, and all of 2020. The guy did something pathologically wrong with Rudolph Giuliani. And that racism stems way before Donald Trump was elected. You know,
right? Like what I was talking about,
the
relationship to him and Dave Dinkins is what I was talking about. How he was dogging Dave.
I agree. I was just gonna bring it all together. I mean, the guy, you know, basically has been this way. He's crazy. I mean, and the thing is that I don't want to sound like very sophomoric about it. I really feel there is something wrong. He needs to have his law license taken away from him. You know, he does outrageous things. He ended his high-profile marriage at a news conference with his one legitimate wife to be with a paramour. You know, I mean, he married his second cousin. I mean, there's just something, there's a pathology with this man that goes way back, and the one thing that Trump and Giuliani have in common is a mafia background. You know, as much as he touts as how he fought, you know, the mob and all that when he was head of the Southern District, you go into his familial roots, and his daddy and Trump's father had a lot going on way back when. And this is these are the seeds of these two families that you know, we're facing today, and damn near brought this country to its freaking knees.
Right, yeah, but I want to talk about, like I said, Dave Dinkins being the first black mayor of New York. I mean, I understand Rudy and Trump's history, but I was just talking about how Rudy, like Trump, they both dogged the black, Trump dogging Obama, Rudy dogging Dave, but throughout Dave Dinkins' career, he really kind of, like Barack, took the high road in terms of things, and just the fact that New York City, even us over here in Jersey, we're very proud that, you know, Dave Dinkins was able to get elected mayor. And he really kind of got dogged trying to get it reelected and go into his second term. Unfortunately, in the situation in Crown Heights came up. And I think that was really probably what damaged his ability to get reelected. Because up until that point, he was seeming like he was a favorite, I guess, or in the league.
Yeah, he did a lot of things. I mean, the thing is that he to this day, and I still hear some people talk about how, you know, Giuliani brought the crime down, but all that stuff started with David Dinkins, and Dinkins never
right.
got the appropriate credit for it, you know. And it's unfortunate what happened in Crown Heights, that rebellion, you know, you know, that was another situation that just really was not handled properly. But he was able to rally the troops. He, you know, it led to the appointment of the first black police commissioner, Lee P. Brown. After that, he was able to get Ray, boy, my mind is going, but you know who I'm talking about. His son used to be an anchorman on Channel 5 for many years. Ray, it'll come to me. I'm having a senior moment,
okay.
I'm afraid. I'm ashamed to admit. But the deal is that he was very progressive. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Do you remember who I'm talking about?
No, go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
Oh, okay, anyway, yeah, because, I mean, he had a distinguished career. You don't hear much about him now, but, you know, he had gone to Haiti and settled some of the issues there, you know, after the Dinkins administration ended. But, you know, I could tell by the time he ran that second term, there was only 50,000 votes that separated Giuliani from Dinkins in the second go-round in 93. So Giuliani just barely got in, and there was always the dispute of that. He's going around looking for recounts of what's going on. I just think 50,000 votes made a difference, but I also felt there was a sense of relief that I witnessed over David Dinkins when, after he lost that election in 93, and he said, you know what, this racism is, you know, it's the nonsense that Obama did, but for some reason I just felt that Obama handled that a lot better than David did. You know, I mean, we're talking about somebody of equal character, equal education, but for some reason it's just the manner in which David handled that, and I just think that there are times when you can't be all things to all people. You know, when an Italian gets in there, and I'm not saying this with any prejudice, check the history books. When Fiorello LaGuardia there was mayor back in the 40s, and you know, the Italian community were able to get jobs because many of them were not even treated, you know, in some instances worse than black people. You know, same thing with the Irish, you know, when they were able to get into the fire department and the police department controlled that for years, you know, before they were able to break the color, before black people were able to break the color line. And I need not tell you about Edward I. Koch, you know, and I'm not saying this with any racism or malice. Check the history. You know, there's a certain amount of favoritism, but when it comes to us, we can't show favoritism to our base. We have to be all things to all people. And unfortunately, I think David Dinkins just did not know how to handle that on the heels of the Korean grocery boycott, Crown Heights Rebellion. There were just a confluence of events that worked against him. And then you had the guy that used to spar with your mother all the time on WABC, Bob Grant, that basically led to a lot of the night. He was the Sean Hannity of that period, you know? So
well,
they had places
the race card
like that.
They played the race card. Let's just be real about it. The Republican Party played the race card. Giuliani played the race card. We all know that the city of New York does not have enough registered Republicans to defeat a Democratic candidate. So how did they do it? The same playbook that they used in 2016 for getting Trump elected. They played the race card. And they I mean, how else are you going to go? Dinkins did what he was supposed to do. If you want to get in the gutter and roll around with these people, you're not going to win. You have got to take the higher ground.
I agree. But when you look back at the 89 contest, remember there was the poor black kid who was shot in Brooklyn, that basically sounded the death knell of the Koch administration. You know who I'm talking about.
Yusuf
Hawkins. Had it not been for that and the anger that resonated throughout the black and Latino community demanding change, this is what led to his election. So the numbers were there, but I think there were people in our own community that basically looked back and said, you know, we want somebody who's going to be far more forceful. I mean, yes, you're right. You don't want to openly discriminate, but for some reason, I don't think he was able to sell himself, and that's why that 50,000 vote margin really made a difference. And to be honest with you, there should have been a demand for a recount because the deficiency was in all the NYCHA houses in the city. I remember having Sonny Carson, the late Brooklyn activist, on the air talking about that, you know? And there were just issues. But this idiot's running around the country, I'm talking about Giuliani now, demanding a recount for Trump, you know, when that should have been investigated highly. And you're absolutely right, Byron. You know, there's only one borough in New York that's pro-Republican, and that's Staten Island. And even that's changing.
I mean, I just think it's really poetic justice. Cut you off. I think it's just really poetic justice that Rudy is kind of ending up the way he's ending up with how he did Dave Dinkins and, you know, his mayoralship during the time in New York. He was doing an Institute of Stop and Frisk, right? So just watching him with the dye running down his face the other day and being kind of, you know, embarrassed or embarrassing himself in the actual courtroom is poetic justice for me, you know, because that's exactly what an individual like him deserves. And I think I saw on one of the internet or somewhere that he admitted that his fraud claims were exaggerated. It was from one of the news channels, you know, they have the stills there with the Chiron underneath, but it's not surprising. But these guys, you know, I mean, even Trump now. I mean, look at him now. I mean, this guy came on the scene with such bravado, and he was the man. And I was just thinking earlier today, it's almost comical because, you know, how people kind of have a negative, people who aren't rich, have a negative image of rich or wealthy people, you know, that kind of, you know, these rich people are just all full of themselves. And you know, you always see the old movies where the prince and the pauper or the rich person just wants to have a regular life and be considered just like everybody else and be just like everybody else, you know, and want to prove that I don't have heirs and I don't, you know, my wealth is not who I am. And Trump is just the opposite. You know, he's the only guy who was the rich guy and was kind of cool. People had an okay opinion of him that really didn't know all of his involvements. I'm talking about, you know, back in the day when he was enjoying his initial PR swing. You know, he kind of had he's kind of okay rich guy, you know. But in that, watching him perform as President of the United States, he totally spoiled the image of a guy who could be rich and serve the people is basically what I'm getting at. A person of wealth who could come from an advantaged station in life and do something just out of empathy or for their concern for their fellow man. Obviously, that was something that the Kennedys faced to a certain degree, whether their detachment from the common working person, average working man, so to speak, whether they're able to relate, you know. And somehow Trump convinced these idiots that they were relatable to him. And the only thing clearly that they were relatable to him in is their hatred and their ability to be willingness to believe the bullshit that he was promoting and all of those nutty ass websites and, you know, Alex Jones and all these theories and QAnon and all that because it fits the narrative of life that they want to live, you know, that they want to live for themselves. Well, selective information, right? Private information, private news.
One thing is certain. Biden's announcement of who's going to be the attorney general will determine how this country is going to write its law and order and rule of law back into a believable system. Because if it comes up with some mamsy-pamsy person, because this person is going to have to go nuclear on some of these folks. Guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to break down the wall of racism and hatred. The attorney general has to establish that there is going to be respect, and they're going to have to do it from the top down. Don't try to fix it from the bottom up. And here's where it starts. You want them people to wear masks? Guess what? You got a $1 billion guaranteed industry by ticketing. Ticket these people who are not wearing a mask. Put them on fines. I'm telling you, it's very easy to break this down. And you're going to have to start doing it because these states are out of control with this virus.
Oh,
you got governors
it's worse than what it was.
Basically said, well, we didn't want to do it the first time, but now they're trying to lock it down. I tell you. D.C. and Maryland and Virginia, governors are saying, we are going to make the law work. You walk around without a mask, give them a ticket. Start collecting these fines.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you can change this.
The unfortunate thing is that to that point for people to be concerned enough to do these things, you know. That's the whole thing about it. I mean, you know, the disuniter in chief, Trump, you know, the guy who's making the United States the ununited states. So people don't care about each other. People don't care about each other in other regions. They already proved they don't care about people of different racial backgrounds. You know, that was early on when they first got mad in Michigan and marched on the state capitol with their guns. They made that clear when the statistic came out that the majority of people that were being infected were black and brown people because they were the frontline workers. All the racists said, hell with that. We're not going to wear any masks. You know, for these
taboos,
and you know,
but I'll give the governor of Michigan credit because she is starting to enact policy that's going to address racism in the state of Michigan. That was in the headline news today as well. So you see, governors who are going to work with the Justice Department and the Biden administration, they know that they got to do. It ain't gonna be easy. It's going to be some really hard work, but it can be done. You're going to have to
put people
back in line.
They really have to have go ahead, Wayne. I was going to say just real quick, a commitment to that policy of, a no-tolerance policy with racial treatment of people. We got just under 2 minutes, so I think, Wayne, you wanted to say something real quick?
No, I just happened to, you know, just wanted to chime in. I happen to agree. You know, I mean, something's got to happen, and it's got to be on both sides. There's some cleaning up that needs to be done in the Democratic Party as well. You know, I'm not really happy with the DNC leadership, and, the deal is it's one thing for you all to be constantly sending emails, getting people to send money and all this business, but, you know, there were some deficiencies in the last contest when it comes to Florida, and it just bothers me that, you know, we have not straightened that problem out.
All right. All right, well, that's a topic or discussion probably for another time that we should get into. We want them to be able to do one thing at a time because we know the Democrats are good at snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. or the other way around.
Byron,
you want to give your sign off, let people know what's happening?
I just want to say, my people, Thanksgiving and giving thanks. Keep that in mind. This is the holiday season, the holy day season. Let us ride to the end of the year giving thanks and thanks for giving. Peace and love, everybody.
Brother Byron Saunders, we'll talk to you soon. Brother Wayne, give the people your
last
words.
Hey, man, I just want to concur with everyone's temperament at this point. I just basically want to echo what Governor Cuomo said the other day, that we got to stay by ourselves during this holiday season to cut
all right
down.
All right, Wayne, thanks. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
Again, brother, we'll run out of time. 3 seconds. This is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Citizen Payne. That's Byron and Wayne. And this is Kay's Son and Friends on Blog Talk. We'll get at it maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. Keep your eyes open.